Good morning, Your Honors. Philip Bronson, appearing for Mr. James. The first argument in the opening brief is where we've argued that the trial court erroneously excluded co-defendants Wilson's statements providing appellant with an alibi defense, specifically his statements that he did not see James from the time that he went into Hinder's room on July 2nd until after the robbery on July 3rd, following his return to the apartment.
Was that hearsay?
That would be hearsay, but our argument is that it was admissible under Federal Rule of Evidence 804, Subdivision B, Paren 3, that it met the requirements of this statute because
How did it inculpate the claimant?
How did it inculpate?
I mean, he said, I didn't see James there, but he's not saying, but I committed the bank robbery.
Well, in the statement, he mentions the words robbery. How does it
inculpate himself? How does it inculpate the declarant?
Well, I think there's an implied admission when he's speaking about the robbery that there's an implied admission here that he participated in the robbery by saying that he did not see him until after the robbery on July 3rd, following his return to the apartment. Especially considering it with the rest of the statement of this proffer that he made to the assistant United States attorney, in which he confessed to the robbery. That's how we submit that this would be inculpating, in which he inculpated himself in the offense.
What is the citation to the excerpts of record as to the exact statement of this out-of-court declarant?
Exhibit 3.
In my excerpt, it's at page appellant's excerpt is at page 29.
Well, but that's not the excerpt number. This is Exhibit 3, 204. Is that what you're looking at?
Yes.
Federal Bureau of Investigation transcript 110602.
Yes.
Okay.
And he says here, neither James nor Grettenberg were in Hinder's room that night. Wilson did not see James from the time that he went into Hinder's room on the night of July 2nd, 2002, until after the robbery occurred on July 3rd, 2002. I think from this statement, the jury could reasonably infer that Wilson is admitting to participating in the robbery. That's essentially our argument. And then,
but where does it say in the statement that he's admitting participating in the robbery? He could easily have been stating, "I didn't see this fellow in the room during the period of time when I've been told a robbery occurred." Or when the robbery occurred, it doesn't say, "And I was a robber." There's a slight inference, but you think that's enough?
I think it's a reasonable inference, whether slight or substantial, and that should have been allowed to go to the jury. And I think that defense counsel should have, if it had gone to the jury, had been admitted into the evidence, I think that...
Did this declarant plead guilty?
Wilson...
Wilson
pled guilty, as I recall the record.
Okay.
And then the argument is that... Assuming that this meets the requirement of a reasonable inference that a robbery that Wilson was admitting he committed a robbery, that it met the three requirements of Section 804.3, paren B, paren 3, because Wilson was unavailable because he had exercised his privilege against self-incrimination. And as I've just argued previously, the statement tended to subject Wilson to criminal liability. And the government has argued that the statement, because it was a proffer, the statement could not be used in their case in chief. Our argument is that the statement, there was no reason why the statement could not have been used in state court on a prosecution for just a common law robbery under Penal Code Section 211. And certainly, if this statement were admitted in a trial in which the co-defendant Wilson decided to testify that he could be impeached with, that his credibility would be undercut, impeached with the introduction of the statement. And then there's the issue of trustworthiness of the statements. The statement was corroborated by the fact that there was no physical evidence found that linked James to the parking lot or to the bank, and that was sufficient corroboration to make the statement trustworthy. Also, it was substantially, as to this part of it, it was substantially in accord with co-defendant Washington's proffer.
But it sort of conflicted with what Mr. Hinders said. Because Hinders testified that James had told him to go case the bank.
And Grettenberg, didn't she also testify?
Yes, she also testified.
And that he'd come back with these guys from the robbery, I guess.
That's true. But on the other hand, there is some corroboration of the statement that was sufficient to meet the defense burden of showing trustworthiness of the statement.
Saying there was a lack of evidence to apparently there was evidence controverting the statement from Hinders and also from Grettenberg. Is that her name?
Yes, from Grettenberg. But we have the statement. Excuse me. We have the stocking masks were tested for DNA, and
yeah, but he didn't wear a stocking mask. He was in the car.
That's true, Your Honor. But that would be one. You could still. Even with that item, or without that item, there is some corroboration because of the lack of physical evidence linking James to the parking lot or to the bank. And I'm not talking about Grettenberg's testimony or Hinders, but of the fact of physical evidence itself that was lacking.
But isn't the element of trustworthiness in 804b3 the trustworthiness of the declarant, not that the trustworthiness circumstantially established by other evidence or lack thereof? What evidence is there that Mr. Wilson was particularly trustworthy?
Well, other than the fact that a reasonable person would not admit to committing a federal bank robbery, that's one aspect that would show that would corroborate trustworthiness. But it's difficult on this record to go into Wilson's character and say that there was substantial evidence that he was a credible person. And the argument, our argument, is based on the fact that there was corroboration because there was no physical evidence linking James to the parking lot.
How do you handle LeGrand versus Stewart that seems to suggest you have to parse out inculpatory from non-inculpatory statements, and only those statements that are inculpatory come in under this exception?
Yes, but then in Pacneo, this circuit did parse out a statement.
Well, but the statement in question there was both inculpatory and exculpatory, the statement itself. Like, I did it, but my kid wasn't with
it. But yes, and I think it's similar. There's the same situation here. Wilson is admitting to his participation in the robbery while at the same time exculpating James.
But if Wilson has said, I did it alone, that would be an inculpatory statement that would exculpate at the same time.
But
that's not what he said.
But it seems to me that he's also, that here Wilson is exculpating James by while admitting he was in the robbery, that he wasn't present with him at the time of the robbery.
How does the lack of James being in the robbery inculpate or exculpate Wilson any more or less?
It doesn't. It's his own. It's if you parse the statement, Wilson's statement that he did not see him until after the robbery, from which there's an inference there that inculpates that Wilson. Wilson is admitting his participation in the robbery in that, while excluding James from being there.
The question is, how does the exclusion of James inculpate Wilson?
It
doesn't really, does it?
No, but in Paggio, he said that as to his son, that he, the father, was 100% responsible, and therefore he was.
But Wilson doesn't say he's 100% responsible. As a matter of fact, we know that Hinders and Wayne Washington were involved in it, right?
But it didn't seem to me that
to some of your other points, such as the sufficiency of the evidence of the use of a firearm during the robbery under the Pinkerton rule. Do you want to address that?
In that situation, there does not appear to be any substantial evidence that appellant was aware that James was aware that these individuals were going to use guns in the robbery.
Does he have to be aware that they were using them, or does he have to reasonably foresee under Pinkerton that they will be used, given the plan of takeover which was in operation?
Well, I think the government was required to put on some evidence that there was some conversation about the use of weapons, or that weapons, he was there when the weapons had been assigned to various persons, or that he had seen them carrying weapons out of the apartment or that morning. There would need to be something more in this situation than just the fact that there were guns that had been used. If he was supposed to be in the car and was supposed to be serve as a lookout, that doesn't flow from that he would have to know, or that it was reasonably foreseeable that he would know that guns would be used. it seems to me that there is no real evidence here to upon which to establish foreseeability and upon which the jury could have found foreseeability. And that's essentially our argument. And then there's the argument about the restraint, in which we've argued that there needs to be something more than the use of a gun and the direction and a direction for the bank employee to follow. It seems that almost
you think that when a gun is pointed at a bank manager and she's told, do this, do that, walk over there, don't leave, that's not physical restraint?
Not within the meaning of the enhancement. She was not tied, bound, or locked up.
Isn't a Thompson case, one of our cases in 1997, a gunpoint equals physical restraint?
But I think I think Thompson is out of line with the other circuits in which they've had some finding of actual physical restraint, such as being tied up.
But can we overrule one of our panel decisions because it's out of line with other circuits? Don't we have to go in bank to do that?
Your Honor, I don't have the answer to that specific question. I have about 3 minutes left. I would like to reserve.
That is fine.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, good morning, Your Honors. Bill Crowfoot for the United States. In the time allowed, I'll address the three conviction trial issues principally, and then perhaps briefly the sentencing issues, focusing actually on the latter of the two, because the first of the two, the restraint issue, is within the law of this circuit that hasn't been overturned. Your Honors, turning to the discussion which occupied a considerable portion of the earlier argument, which is the issue of the unavailable witness, Mr. Wilson's statements, and whether they were properly excluded. The Paglio case versus Legrand, and sort of analyzing the difference between the two and why this one fell within Legrand, the government agrees with the implication of some of the questions asked by the court. And with respect to Paglia, I would say what distinguishes that, or that line of thinking, suggests that the exculpatory part of the statement somehow needs to make the inculpatory part of the statement stronger, or in some manner underscore the culpable role of the person making the statement. And in this case, that is not so. The statement made the court has before it was made in the course of a longer discussion, and it is separable. The statement the defense sought to get in at trial does not actually increase or enhance Mr. Wilson's role in that. If the court were to find that it was nonetheless not separable, the question then becomes, was it trustworthy? And in fact, the statement is absolutely not trustworthy and not corroborated by anything trustworthy. The only corroboration of the exculpatory statement that Wilson makes comes from Mr. Washington's proffer, done roughly contemporaneously. And when one reads both of those proffers together, they are significantly at odds with each other on key facts about that event, which clearly points to the fact that one or both of them was lying. And
did the trial court rule that there was a failure to show trustworthiness of the statement?
Yes, Your Honor, the trial court did rule that. The trial court's
government's excerpt, can you read me what exactly the trial
yes,
court
Your Honor.
Said?
The trial court's tentative order on this matter, which she then indicated that she would be signing. The trial court's tentative order begins at government excerpt of record, page 2, and the actual statement where the court indicates that the court discusses LeGrand. The court then does go on to discuss trustworthiness. That would start on page.
The court discussed Paglio?
The court does not discuss Paglio, Your Honor. The Paglio
brought to the court's attention?
Paglio was not. It was not a part of either the defense brief or our brief at that time. The government focused on LeGrand, and I don't remember the basis for defense, but I don't believe they raised Paglio. Paglio came up on appeal.
How did you miss Paglio?
I can't answer that question, Your Honor. LeGrand is the later case. It comes after Paglio in the order of decision making, and it seemed to be the case most directly on point.
Okay, so what did the court say on the trustworthiness prong?
What the court said on trustworthiness was the following. The court makes a general statement they would not be trustworthy.
Are you paraphrasing?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Are you paraphrasing?
I am.
Read. Trust but verify. Read.
Okay. All right. Well, what I was actually, the court first lays out the Ospina requirements. The circumstances also fail to clearly corroborate the co-defendant's trustworthiness or the truth of their statements. James stresses the fact that his DNA was not found in the stocking mask used during the bank robbery, but this fact alone fails to clearly corroborate the co-defendant's statements because the circumstances indicate that a third person waited outside the bank while the masked robbers went in. Furthermore, Washington and Wilson are not clearly trustworthy since they know James and may have had reason to lie for him. There's a citation. The indicia of reliability are, therefore, far too insufficient to warrant admission of the co-defendant's proffer statements under Rule 804b3.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Well, there was also on page 5, it started out, in this case, the statements were not spontaneous. Bottom of page 5 after the cite to Ospina. In this case, the statements were not spontaneous and were made only after arrest. This is one of the reasons why it wasn't trustworthy.
Yes, Your Honor.
In addition, Wilson and Washington made the proffer to the prosecutor. The defendants likely knew defendants likely knew was in a position to influence the charges against James. So that was also in addition.
Yes, Your Honor.
These various things indicated that the statements were not.
The court did point to the immunized nature of the statement and what was going on at that point. As it emerged later at trial, when the court actually also had the opportunity to hear the witnesses, the court heard Mr. Hinder's description of what actually happened the day of the robbery. The court heard Nicole Grettenberg's statements as to what happened from her perspective, the defendant returning and all the circumstances related to that. The court also heard the DNA expert. The absence of the scientific evidence doesn't corroborate Mr. Wilson's statement. The DNA expert indicated essentially that the lack of DNA of the defendant on either of the two robbers' masks was actually not probative of anything because the two known robbers did not have each other's evidence on their own masks either.
Counsel, where's the evidence that James was aware or reasonably should have foreseen the use of a gun in this case?
Yes, Your Honor. On that matter, it is the government's case. The government's argument, of course, is that
not the government's argument.
I understand.
Where's the evidence from which you argue?
The government proved this case based on the foreseeability, and the evidence is as follows, Your Honor. During the course of the trial, the jury heard Hinders talk about Mr. James's involvement in the not only involvement but central role in planning this robbery. In the course of that, the jury heard Mr. Hinders specifically talk about the questions that James asked him to look out for in the bank, the presence of security, the presence or absence of a glass security wall for the tellers, the number of tellers, people in the bank, and so forth. Hinders came back and spoke to him on those issues, and among other things, said to him that there may be security in the bank. So on the issue of planning, we have the defendant very clearly focused on the details of how this robbery was going to take place. The night, yes, Your Honor, the night before he had arrived with his two co-conspirators, that night before he had already said to Mr. Henders, tomorrow morning I want you to take me somewhere, which he then did do that following morning. In addition to the information related to the bank specifically, and it was, according to Mr. Henders' testimony, Defendant James who told him where to go. The bank was already what appeared to have been pre-identified. Then on the very day of the robbery, when the three robbers go to the bank, all three of them go. Mr. James is obviously aware of that since he's one of the three. The witness outside the bank saw, you know, these, what he referred as a silk stocking mask on top of their heads. He didn't see them pulled down, but he saw them on top of their heads. The defendant would have to have been aware of that, and obviously the defendant would have been aware of them running into the bank. In addition to that, the defendant was aware of the fact that his own car, not the car used to go to the bank, but his own car, we'll refer to it as the switch car, was parked somewhere with a gun underneath the front seat, which he had told witness Grettenberg about the night before, I have a gun with me, because he knew that she was uncomfortable with.
All right, that's the first time I've heard the word gun used in your exposition of the evidence. Why isn't that consistent with him saying he's going to need a gun as part of his flight, but not as part of the commission of the crime?
Your Honor, the fact that the gun is under the seat in the car that's going to be used in the getaway certainly doesn't indicate that he's going to be using it in the bank or anybody else will be using it in the bank. But
all right, let's take a look at the other thing. The fact that he planned the robbery and asked about security in the glass wall is also consistent with the inference that he was deciding whether to rob that bank or not. If there were no security and no glass wall, it looks better for us. If there's security and a glass wall, it doesn't look so good for us. But where do you get the foreseeability of the use of a gun from the presence of security in a glass wall?
The information that he had when Henders came back was that there might be security and there was no glass wall. That is consistent with somebody, that would assist somebody in planning on this kind of robbery and determining whether
or not. Meaning a takeover robbery?
Yes, this takeover robbery, because it would tell the listener of that there might be security, there are a number of people in the bank, so there is an issue here of control over this bank. At the same time, there is no glass wall, which would render a gun possibly useless.
What did Agent Brown say about a gun?
What Agent Brown spoke generally about background information on takeover robberies and the way they work.
Opined as an expert that guns are involved.
He opined as an expert that guns are involved in the overwhelming number of cases because the nature of that type of robbery would require the robbers to control everybody in the bank.
Unlike a little note, I have a bomb in my shoe, and here's a note, give me money.
A note job would, I think the jury would be permitted to infer that a note job would be a considerably less conspicuous event than what Defendant James here.
So there is your evidence. Mr. Brown, as an expert, said that it's foreseeable in takeover robberies that guns be used rather than baseball bats or knives?
Your Honor, Agent Brown's testimony is part of the evidence because the.
Well, we're looking at this de novo to see under a Rule 29 optic whether there's sufficient evidence to have submitted this issue and instruction to the jury. So all you've got to do is to point to some substantial evidence.
Yes, Your Honor. And
of use of that foreseeable use of a gun. And what you point to is Agent Brown's testimony and James's instruction to Henders to check the place out for security and glass.
That is correct, Your Honor.
All right.
But the was there any evidence that the three of them sat down and talked about, well, we're going to rob this bank and we're going to take it over?
No, Your Honor, there is no evidence of that. The evidence is principally, as I've described it, and very importantly, the fact that Defendant James clearly appeared to be in charge of the planning and execution of this bank robbery.
What evidence was there that James had a gun?
The evidence that James had a gun was twofold. One, he said to witness Grettenberg, "I have a gun," because she was uncomfortable about that. Later on, when after the robbery occurred, she took the police officers and identified James's car, and when they searched that car, there was in fact a gun underneath the driver's seat of that car. Your Honors, on the issue of the excluded videotape, it hasn't come up, and perhaps there are no questions on that. The government believes, to be in a very summary form, that the defendant absolutely was not deprived of any opportunity to cross-examine the witness here.
Well, Grettenberg was testified, and she related the warning, and she was cross-examined on that.
Yes. With that, Your Honor, the government will submit. Are there no further questions?
By the way, it hasn't been brought up by counsel, and I will ask him on this, but what's your position as to whether the appellant has asked for an Ammaline review of the sentencing?
The government does not believe the appellant has asked for an Ammaline review of the sentencing.
And you mentioned it in the footnote of your opinion, the Booker case had been decided in Ammaline.
Yes, we did.
There's no response to that from the other side.
No, the reply does not respond to that issue directly.
Mr. Bronson, you have a couple of minutes. You might address yourself. Are you asking for an Ammaline review or not? And if so, where is it in your opening or reply brief?
It's not, but I would request if I could have 10 days to consider this. And
on what ground would you ask for an Ammaline review of resentencing?
Because I didn't brief the issue, and I haven't considered it. I would need to review the sentencing transcript again, and if there's an issue.
So you don't have any ground. You want to go look for one.
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, the reason we ask that is because there can be circumstances where an Ammaline remand might be prejudicial to the defendant. And so we don't either encourage or discourage that. But in any case, you haven't asked for it. All right. Do you want to address any other issues?
It's just on the issue of the gun, their strongest evidence is the what the agent testified to in concluding that this was a takeover robbery. But our position that it was still the evidence that was presented was still too speculative to allow the jury to conclude beyond a reasonable doubt that.
Is there any significance to the fact that he had a gun, Grettenberg's testimony to finding one in his car?
It's difficult to work backward from that because the gun was obviously there to assist in the in any escape. And
is it rational to believe that you'd be planning to use a gun in an escape but not in the robbery itself?
There would be some rational reason for believing that a person who was going to have a gun to use and escape might be willing to use the weapon. It's a reasonable conclusion, Your Honor.
And why would somebody make it a conscious decision planning a takeover robbery of a bank with possible security not to use a gun inside the bank but to use one once outside?
That's right.
I could see how a person might rationally think that it's too dangerous to be using a gun inside the bank.
Not too dangerous to be using a gun outside the bank.
And the chance on an escape that the gun would unlikely be used.
Thank you.
I would submit, Your Honor.
Mr. Bronson, in view of your request that you have 10 days to consider whether you wish to request an Ameline remand in any of the rest of the defendant and consult it with Judge Thompson, I don't think Judge Thompson would have any objection. We'll give you 10 days to write a letter to the court determining whether you wish to have an Ameline remand and you cite any authority that you might find as to why you can ask for it at that late date. All right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Case stands noted.